Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to today's broadcast of Tapping to the Truth. With you as always, this is your ever so humble host, Tim Tapp, coming to you live from historic Roane County, Tennessee. Hope you're having a fantastic day wherever you are and whatever you may be doing. Unless, of course, as is always the caveat, you happen to be engaged in global jihad. In that case, I hope you're not having such a good day. Well, mostly because you're a bad person. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I wanted to talk about a few things today. There's some things that happened this past week that I think are well worth discussing. And then there was something that I came across, actually somebody else pointed me onto it, and that's this trans-abled thing, for lack of a better word. I really don't understand where this is coming from. It's evidently been around for a while. But I had not even heard about it until this past week, or at least I don't think I have. It may have been something in passing that I very well may have thought of as just being somebody trying to pull a prank or a joke, because it doesn't make sense on multiple levels. But evidently, I'm not the first person to come to it this past week, because when I went to go do some research about it, just about all the articles I found regarding it were within the last week. So I'm assuming most people got turned on to this because of this big event they're having going on in Canada, and this is where the news came on. And I'll tell you, it was actually one of my regular listeners that was contacting me through social media that was asking me about it. They had heard it on the Glenn Beck show, which I have discovered. Evidently, I'm in pretty good company as far as the folks that listen to this show and who else that they listen to. Most of the BTR folks listen to a wide range of really good BTR hosts. But then the folks that are listening via apps like Stitcher tend to be also listening to folks like Mark Levin and Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh in particular. However, Rush, I don't think, is on Stitcher. I'm not sure about that. I haven't checked 100%, but I know you can find them on TuneIn. So, but at any rate, those are some of the same folks that are listening to this show. So I guess they assume that because I cover a lot of the same topics roughly about the same time they do, that I'm listening to them. So they asked me about it and what I thought and so on and so forth. And, you know, I had to sit back and say, you know what, I don't know what I think about that, because I really haven't heard about this, not that I recall. And so I'm left with having to do research, and when I started looking at it, I wanted to talk about this. So I decided to do a little bit of research, went into it, and I'm going to read to you an article here in a little bit. But beforehand, I really wanted to just kind of set the stage here. Because what we're talking about with trans-abled people, or transability as it's being referred to, it certainly sounds PC enough. You know, it sounds like something that we shouldn't really be negatively commenting about for the individuals that feel this way. But we're talking about people that really want to remove body parts because they don't feel it fits their personal identity. They want to remove limbs, or want to be blinded, or want to be paralyzed. And it's very hard for me to wrap my mind around this, that somebody who's completely able-bodied would want to do this, and that instead of pushing to try and get these people some type of help so that they no longer feel like they're struggling to be who they're supposed to be, and that it's necessary for them to lose a limb or a body part or an ability that most humans normally fight to try and keep intact. Well, rather than try to help them to move past those feelings, we're now suddenly being moved into a position where we're supposed to be supportive of their decision to want to amputate body parts and whatever. That, to me, it seems like if we didn't have any other proof, if we didn't have any other evidence that we've gone far, too far down the rabbit hole of this political correctness and the mental disorder that is liberalism, and the efforts of these humanists, the transhumanists, the eugenicists, no matter how many times they change their names, they're still the same people. They want population control on the masses, and they believe themselves to be superior to everyone else, blah, 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 yakety smackety. We've gone so far down this that we're accepting way too much, and we're not calling the spade a spade. This is some type of mental defect. I know I'm not supposed to say that. But it is. It is some type of mental defect that you honestly feel that this is a compelling need. And a lot of people are drawing these lines, and a lot of the talk that has taken place this past week and a lot of the readings that I came across were people drawing the same parallels to transgender. And in a lot of ways, you could say that this is, in essence, the same type of things as if you're a male to begin with and you feel you should be female, and you go and have the surgery done to remove your penis and then whatever else is required in that surgery, that you are, in fact, kind of mutilating yourself. You're removing an appendage. So in a lot of ways, this is an identical scenario. But transgender, we're supposed to accept. Transgender, now I'm a bigot just because I even made this comparison, which is fine. People are going to say what they're going to say about me, and you're either going to agree with me or you're going to disagree with me, and some of you are going to disagree very harshly, but you're going to do so not based on facts, not based on logic and reason, not based on even looking at what we're actually discussing, but based almost solely on the emotional response that you have a friend who has their feelings hurt when someone calls them out. Well, that's not a very strong argument, I'm afraid. So you can call me your names. You can do whatever you want to do. But anyway, let me just go ahead and we'll go down this article and then we'll cut back and we'll... this article, I think, it instituted a lot of the same. This is from the National Post and on the Canada beat. And, of course, the headline there, in case you're looking for it, you can find it on nationalpost.com. And the headline is, Becoming Disabled by Choice, Not Chance. Transabled people feel like imposters in their fully working bodies. This article was originally posted on June 3rd and updated again on the 4th. Sarah Bosfield is the individual who posted the article, so that all the pertinent information and all the proper credits given where it belongs. But at any rate, basically is part of a series going on showcasing research at the Congress of the Humanities and Social Sciences that was going on this past week in Ottawa. The article starts out like this. When he cut off his right arm with a very sharp power tool, and called off one hand Jason, let everyone believe it was an accident. But he had for months tried different means of cutting and crushing the limb that never quite felt like his own, training himself on first aid so he wouldn't bleed to death, even practicing on animal parts that he sourced from a butcher. Quote, my goal was to get the job done with no hope of reconstruction or reattachment, and I wanted some method I could actually bring myself to do. Now, this is what he told people at the body modification website, modblog.com. His goal was to become disabled. People like Jason had been classified as transabled, feeling like imposters in their own bodies, their arms and legs in full working order. Quote, "We define transability as the desire or the need for a person identified as able-bodied by other people to transform his or her body to obtain a physical impairment." This is according to Alexandria Burrell, a Quebec-born academic who will present on transability at the Congress of Social Sciences and Humanities at the University of Ottawa. He went on to say, quote, "The person could want to become deaf, blind, an amputee, a paraplegic. It's a really, really strong desire. Researchers in Canada are trying to better understand how transabled people think and feel." Clive Baldwin, a Canadian research chair in narrative studies, who teaches social work at St. Thomas University in Fredericton, has interviewed 37 people worldwide who identified as transabled. Most of them are men. About half are in Germany and Switzerland, which also seems an odd coincidence. But who knows of a few in Canada? Oh, he knows of a few in Canada, I'm sorry. Most crave an amputation or paralysis. Though he has interviewed one person who wants his penis removed. Another wants to be blind. Many people, like One Hand Jason, arrange accidents to help achieve their goal. One dropped an incredibly heavy concrete block on his legs, an attempt to injure himself so bad an amputation would be necessary. But, unfortunately for this poor soul, doctors saved leg. He limps, but he's not. This is not the disability he wants to. The transabled are very secretive and often keep their desires to themselves. One 78-year-old man told Baldwin that he lived with the secret for 60 years and never told his wife. Some of his study participants do draw parallels to the experience many transgender people express of not feeling like they're in the right body. Baldwin says that the disorder is starting to be thought of as a neurological problem with the body's mapping rather than a mental illness. It's a problem for individuals because it's distressing. But lots of things are. He also suggests this is just another form of body diversity, like transgenderism. And amputation may help someone achieve similar goals as someone who, say, undergoes cosmetic surgery to look more like who they believe their ideal selves to be. In the late 1990s, Scottish surgeon Dr. Robert Smith amputated the legs of two patients at their request. While the surgery involved National Health Service staff, each patient paid nearly $6,000 for their procedures. Well, at least that means that the taxpayers there weren't on the hook for these modifications that obviously weren't necessary. As the public begins to embrace people who identify as transgender, the trans people within the disability movement are also seeking their due, or at the very least, a bit of understanding in the public that cannot fathom why anyone would want to be anything other than healthy and mobile. But this has been met with great resistance in both the disability activist community and the transgendered circles, This being argued by Burrell, who is a visiting scholar or feminist, gender and sexuality studies at Wesleyan University in Middleton, Connecticut. They tend to see transabled people as dishonest people, people who will try to steal resources from the community, people who would be disrespectful by denying or fetishizing or romanticizing disability reality. Burrell also says adding people in both transgender and disability circles tends to make judgmental or prejudicial statements about transabled people. Each try to distance themselves. Burrell, who is himself disabled and transgender, believes the transgender community distances itself because it has worked very hard to depathologize what is known as gender dysphoria. And it has sought its removal from the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. Transability is also known as Body Integrity Identity Disorder, which was only just added to the Emerging Measures and Models appendix section of the DSM-5 in 2013. Many transabled people want to see it fully added to the psychiatric Bible because it might legitimize their experience in the field of medicine. Now, that's the article. The question is, what do you think? I'm left with only knowing what it is exactly that I think. And I think that what we're seeing is the continuing influence of a liberal ideology, a so-called progressive ideology, where we're supposed to accept everything and challenge nothing, where the masses are supposed to limit themselves either through lack of intelligence or through mental disorders or through whatever else they seem fit that the maladies of the common man are. I think it is easy to draw parallels between trans anything when it comes to try and determine personal identity. I can't sit back and say that I'm qualified to tell you who is and isn't suffering from a disorder, but I can tell you that not even just 5 years ago would we be having a discussion about someone like one-handed Jason, and we wouldn't be making jokes at his expense. We wouldn't be having a conversation about one-handed Jason, and we wouldn't be talking about what a nut job this guy is, and yet that is a terrible way of putting someone with a mental disorder. It is, I admit it. But tell me I'm wrong. This is a form of a mental disorder. There is no two ways about it, and whether you try to say, like some of these doctors are trying to convince people, that it's a matter of body mapping in the brain, well, okay, if there is some medical thing you can do to help treat these people so that they're not intentionally disabling themselves, then let's do that. Let's get these people the treatment they need, because it is not natural nor normal to mutilate oneself into a point of intentional disability. I mean, sure, some folks have shot themselves in the foot to get out of military service. That's an understandable thing, but that's not what this is. It's not an acceptable thing by my standards either, just FYI, throwing that out there. But it's still something we can understand. These people didn't want to go do what the military was going to have them go do. They were desperate to get out, and they did something stupid. So, yeah, we can understand that, but that's not what this is. This is somebody feeling like, well, my left arm, it doesn't feel like that's really my left arm. I just want it gone. I feel like I'm not supposed to have that. I'm not supposed to be able to see out of my right eye. I just, that's what I feel. It's not just a desire. It's a need to have my body act the way I feel like it's supposed to act. For most people, regardless of religious denomination, regardless of color, regardless of nationality, or even regardless of what part of the world you're living in and you're a citizen of what country, most of us would fight tooth and nail, first of all, for overall survival, and we would give up these things in an effort to save our lives. It's natural instinct. It's hard to avoid. And then most of us, in turn, would fight tooth and nail to maintain our ability to have full use of our bodies, to be as able-bodied as possible. One of the worst aspects of so many diseases that are among the most horrific we face now is the fact that they tend to take away from us our complete and total able-bodiedness. It is hard, as someone who doesn't suffer from this malady, to understand this malady. But it is not hard to see that there is now an effort by the PC police to get us to accept trans ability, to accept trans-abled people as just being some other variety of person. But keep in mind, whether you want to embrace these people and even encourage them to do their body modifications, and with the, you know, this is part of where I start kind of diverging. I'm very libertarian on a lot of issues, and as I get older, I find myself becoming more and more libertarian. And I can see this ultimate libertarian view of saying, well, it's their body, let them do it. They're not hurting anybody else. What's the point? But there's another part of me that says, at this point, you know, these people, they need something else rather than to just be allowed to mutilate themselves. Do they need help? Yes. Is there some medical procedure we can do to help them to actually remap their body so they don't feel so alienated in it? If that does exist, if those doctors are correct, and that procedure is out there, if there's something we can do, then that's what we need to do for them. If it is just a mental disorder, which it certainly appears from my standpoint, but again, I tell you, I'm not a psychiatrist, I'm not a psychologist, not my field of expertise. I have working understanding of biology. That's where my degree field was in. But psychology, that's not me. So I'm not qualified to make that determination. I will tell you that. But from where I'm sitting, this looks like a mental disorder, and it looks like something that these people need help for. But it concerns me deeply that they want to give it this political correct term, transgender, because keep in mind, the people that are pushing this term and the idea that we should just embrace and accept these folks, these are the same people that have been trying to tell us for a little while now, with a whole new push, a new vim and vigor in the argument, that pedophilia is not a disorder, that it is just another sexual orientation, and that we should be more accepting of this sexual orientation. Now, I'm sorry, I don't know where you're at with this, but my mind, where I sit, no, it's not going to happen. I'm not going to embrace and accept and, in my mind, think it is okay for pedophilia to take place. Pedophiles are among the worst type of criminal. It is an affront to humanity to engage in pedophilia. And don't get me wrong. Okay, I can see it right now. I just saw somebody's going to say, you're equating trans ability with pedophilia. No, I'm not. That is not what I'm saying here. What I am saying is that the same people that want to give you this cutesy little label and somehow allow normal people, and I use the term normal people loosely too, because what is normal, really? Well, it's normal people to be more accepting of your condition, because now somehow you're a victim of something else. And I'm about to get off on a rant about being a victim here in a minute. I had planned it. And at one point, I thought about leaving off the show with it. But then I was afraid that if I started off the show with my rant about being a victim, that somehow we'd miss the point of the whole trans-able discussion. So I didn't want to do that. But we'll get there in a minute. I'm not drawing a line, not at any type of comparison to being transabled or to being a pedophile. Now, I do ask the open question, is there some type of relationship, some type of similarity between transabled and transgendered? There may very well be there. And from everything I've read, lots of other people have made that assertion. Some people, of course, challenge it and say it's not. And naturally, the transgender community is trying to run away from the transabled community. They think it somehow devalues what they're doing. And again, I can understand that as well. In the grand scheme of things, my real concern is, what are we, the general public, going to do? Are we going to recognize people who actually have this condition and do something to help them deal with this condition in a positive, healthy, non-destructive way? Or are we going to step back, take the full 100% libertarian view, and let them mutilate themselves? Or is there something else? Is there someplace else we can take this discussion? Like I said, it seems like maybe I had heard about this before, but I don't remember putting much thought to it. And to be honest, I'm not 100% easy for me to say. I'm not 100% certain that I actually had. But, you know, you ever have one of those conversations where you hear something that sounds an awful lot like something else that you've heard about? You wonder if maybe it wasn't the same thing, you know. I'm there. I'm thinking maybe I had, but I'm not sure. But regardless, it's made a big deal because of this conference they're having in Canada. I think, like a lot of people, I don't really feel like I knew about this. I don't want to talk about Bruce Jenner / Caitlyn Jenner, whatever he wants to call him herself now. I am probably going to continue to refer to Bruce as Bruce Jenner out of habit as much as anything else. And I am the type of person that believes that, you know, as long as there's something reasonable to what you want to be called, there's nothing wrong with calling somebody what they want to be called. Jenner has taken these different steps. I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about Bruce Jenner and the choices he's made in his struggles. I don't see this as being a big deal. I see that as being his business, and every time we talk about it, we're just adding fuel to the fire. The only thing that I really wanted to talk about and discuss when it came to Bruce Jenner is during his little coming out interview and his determination to do what he's decided to do and embracing a transgender existence and actually becoming this other gender role, that she admitted to being a conservative. And at that point was immediately attacked by all the people that suddenly were saying, how brave, how bold, how awesome. Well, we were with you until you said that crap, and now you're a piece of crap, and blah, blah, blah. How quickly the left will turn on you when you don't fit the mold they expect you to fit. But inevitably, the whole talking point, you know, you look around and I don't see folks on the right attacking Bruce Jenner over this. I don't see the reaction that was expected via the interview that, oh, don't you just think a bunch of people on the ride are going, oh, no, we don't want your type. No, no, blah, blah. I haven't seen much. There may be, but I haven't come across any of it. Inevitably, somebody is going to make this connection between transgendered and trans-able, and I just, there's this push that we're just supposed to accept transgendered as being another part of our society. You know what? I can accept that you're part of our society. I don't have to accept what you're doing as part of my life. Because that's not for me. That's not part of who I am. I can accept homosexuals being and doing whatever they want to do as long as they keep it their business. I am informed by my faith how I'm to view homosexuality. But I'm also informed by my faith that I am to love my neighbors, and I am to love all of humanity, and I'm to love my enemies, and I'm to pray for them, and I am to love the people, I am to love the sinners and hate the sin. And that leaves me in a position where I do not and cannot judge. But there is a difference between judging someone and determining whether or not they need some kind of help. And if you can offer that help, do so. If you can't, get out of the way and try to help them find someone who can give them the type of help they need. So, but this transgendered thing is one thing. I don't know that it's even considered a big deal in our society now. I think our society, for the most part, has lost its moral bearings anyway. But transabled is still a completely different animal, and these people, we need to have this discussion because we need to know if there is something we can do. And that's where we start. Talking about it doesn't get anything done, no, but it does start the ball rolling. That's where we find out if we can offer any type of assistance, period. I don't like the idea. It makes me uncomfortable. And, you know, that alone is not reason for action. But it makes me feel like I'm not doing enough when I see somebody who has taken it upon themselves to mutilate themselves because of their own body image, because of their own mental vision of their identity. I mean, we put way too much emphasis on outward appearance anyway. And it's hard for us not to. I myself never really found myself overly concerned about it. But then I do find myself wanting to look appropriate for appropriate situations. You know, we put this huge emphasis on body image, and we've seen all kinds of negative effects as a result. Everything from bulimia to this addiction to plastic surgery that has taken place in an effort to look the role of the perfect person. Is this an extension of that same type of behavior? I don't know, but we need to start finding out. We certainly don't need to be turning a blind eye, no pun intended, to the struggles of these people that are trying to find the right way. We need to find them the type of help that they need, and we need to be able to do it in a fashion that doesn't violate their rights, but at the same time allows them to maintain the body parts that God has saw fit to give them and allow them to keep working. It's nearly akin to these really great athletes who get scholarship opportunities and then just blow that scholarship opportunity over something stupid. There are thousands of athletes that were just as good that didn't get that scholarship opportunity that would be willing to do just about anything to have that opportunity. I draw that parallel to the folks that have become disabled, not by choice, who would be willing to do just about anything in order to have their fully abled bodies back functioning the way they did before whatever caused them to lose use of their body parts. Not a lot of activity today in the chat room. So not a lot of comments going on. A lot of people probably are still hearing about this for the first time. Probably haven't had time to think about it. Maybe right now trying to form an opinion, trying to decide what any and all of this means, if there is something to us setting back and recognizing it as a disorder, or if this is just another route that the eugenicists are taking to try and force this politically correct idea upon us of embracing self-mutilation. I don't know. But this is something, again, I really felt it necessary to talk about today. And I'm open to talking about it in the future, too. If anybody wants to call in and discuss this in a future broadcast, I'd be willing to set aside time. If anybody listening happens to know very much about this, maybe even somebody that's actually transabled yourself, and you're willing to talk about it on air, so we can have a discussion. I would love for you to contact me. You can do it directly through the website, or you can do it at Tap Into the Truth Facebook page. You can email me at ttap@tapintothetruth.com. You can even hit me up at on the Twitter account for the show, a direct message, and I would be happy to talk about you coming on and let's having a further discussion about this, because I think this is something that needs to be discussed. I want to know more about this, especially from the perspective of someone who's suffering from it. Because, like I said at the beginning of the show, from where I'm sitting, this to me looks more like a mental disorder. In a case where we need to stop setting back and saying, oh, well, we just have to embrace these people the same as all other minorities. And instead of doing that, we need to stand up, say, hey, this is not the actions of a well person. We need to get them the help they need, and we need to stop just setting back and tolerating things that we know are wrong. Because we do. And I want to switch gears just a little bit, but this is where I'm going to get onto my rant that I promised you. Sometimes it's funny what'll start a thought in your head. Now, I have considered the idea behind this before, thought about it, but it really hit me funny yesterday. I was out doing family things, and when I'm in the wife's car, she tends to be playing contemporary gospel music more so than anything here lately. It's not always the case. She takes moods, but over the course of the last year and a half or so, she's been heavy into the contemporary gospel, which is fine by me. It's nothing wrong with it. Don't mean to sound like maybe I don't approve of it. Sounding kind of odd to me the way I put that, but one of the songs talked about being broken, and it occurred to me, you know, I got to thinking about the fact that, you know, through Christianity in particular, we talk a lot about being healed through Christ and how we're all broken in one way or another. And how there's this certain level of acceptance of this brokenness. And then I'm going to think that we've actually almost made it a badge of honor just to be a victim. Now, this, of course, has been the actions of the so-called progressives, that everybody is supposed to be a victim. You know, I got news for you. Everybody is a victim of some kind at some point in their lives. But there's nothing honorable about being a victim. There's nothing okay about living your life as a victim. The badge of honor, the medal of courage is given to the people who face being a victim of something beyond their control, and then manage to go on and have a normal, and hopefully better than that, productive and meaningful life. There is nothing acceptable or okay about living the remainder of your life being a victim. But we see this. More than half of the problems with America's current race relations is a whole generation of people have been convinced that they are perpetually a victim of something that happened decades, if not generations ago. If you want to take it all the way back to the slavery thing, then take it to the slavery thing. If you want to take it back to the 70s during the economic downturn, then take it to the economic crisis of the 70s. Wherever you want to take it to, they are perpetually a victim. But they're victims of the very people that are telling them that they're victims. A couple of the stories a little later on in today's broadcast touch on that a little bit. So I'm not going to go too far down that road, but here's the bottom line. There is no honor in being a victim, but there's no shame in being a victim either. And depending on what you're a victim of, maybe you do need some help. And there's no shame in getting that help if you need it. But there's a great deal of shame for those that choose to wallow in the hurt, in the pain, and in the agony of being a victim without ever making the effort to climb out. Now, some people's pains are far deeper than others. Some forms of being a victim are far more devastating than others. And I say this with full understanding of that, but you need to have full understanding of my point, and that is at some point, no matter how badly you've been hurt, no matter how badly the victimization was, at some point, if you want to be an inspiration to someone, at some point, if you want to wear that incident as a badge of courage or a badge of honor, then you have to dig yourself out, lift yourself up, and move on with life as if you were never a victim. That's the stuff of heroes. That's the stuff of inspiration. We all have those opportunities. And there was a time when our society, that's what we expected. Now, one of the negative aspects of that part of our society at that time is there was almost this negative stigma put on people who had a harder time moving forward. There was a huge stigma put on people that needed to seek professional help if it was something so traumatic that was required. Now, those were negatives, and that's a bad thing. And fortunately, we have moved to a point in our society where those stigmas are no longer placed on people. But for crying out loud, it's still a requirement that you must lift yourself up out of that victimization and take charge of your life again. You can't let depression push you down. You can't let being unsatisfied with your body or believing that somehow you're in the wrong body keep you from having a full life. You have got to take charge of that part of your mental faculties. You have got to take charge of that part of your emotional factories, and you have got to move forward. when we look at things that took place, look at the difference between our veterans from World War II to our Vietnam veterans. Now, our Vietnam veterans obviously didn't get a fair shake and were not treated well when they came back home. That's tragic. I hate that. It's horrible. And for those of you who may be a Vietnam veteran who are listening to the show today, thank you for your service. I hope and I pray that that's not the first time you've heard somebody thank you either. But if it is, then please know that I'm not the only one who feels that way. You should have been thanked then. You should have been treated better. But that's not the point where I'm going to. You saw things that were horrible. You experienced things that would literally rip apart people's minds. And you had almost no help or even solace upon returning home. World War II veterans, however, they saw things that were just as bad and in some cases even worse than what a lot of the Vietnam veterans saw. The ones who came back from such horrific battles like the Normandy invasion, they saw a mutilation of bodies the likes of which makes the worst horror movies look tame. And not only did they not come back in these disheveled mental states, they didn't talk about it. They just wanted to put it behind them. Now, maybe that wasn't necessarily the most healthy way of dealing with what they saw, but they still managed to see that. They came back and they went on with their lives. We see people every day that are victimized by something and we never even know it, and they never let it show. They found a way to deal with it, and they found a way to go on with their life. And for the people that have found a way to deal with it, kudos to you. Please help teach others to learn the same thing. This perpetual victimization, it only works to weaken you, and in turn, it weakens the rest of society as a whole. You've got to find a way to be strong again. And I know, easier said than done, right? I don't know what you're going through, right? I've never been where you're at, right? Well, you may be right. I may never have where you're at. But I can tell you, I've been to some pretty sad and sorry places, too. And I can tell you, just about every person in this country, at one point or another, has been. A lot of us have a lot of shared experiences, but you would never know, because some of us chose a stronger path. So understand this too. I'm not saying this as an attack on you. And I'm not trying to call you weak. And I'm not trying to say that you're not doing everything you can do. If anything, what I'm really trying to do is tell you that when you look around and see people who have been where you're at and they have managed to get back, that should serve to you as an example. It can be done. You can do it. And we need you to. Now, this show gets heard all over the world. And I see from the visits to the website, and I see from the demographic information when I pull it up both here and the show as I broadcast it from Spreaker, I see that we have some folks listening around the world, but I typically am thinking in terms of America and the United States when I'm broadcasting. So when I say these things from a cultural basis, I'm saying these things in the name of the country. But in this particular message, this works worldwide, because outside of the borders of the U.S., people face horrible, tragic traumas the likes of which most of us can't even imagine. But they too, the nations and the cultures that they come from, they too would garner strength from the example of those who stand up and move on with their lives, and they too would garner strength as a culture and a nation as more individuals are capable of standing up and showing the type of strength, mental toughness, intestinal fortitude, whatever name you want to call it, to find a way to pick themselves up, get on with their lives, be productive, and be useful to their society. All of humanity can benefit from that mentality. So please, seek the help you need. Lean on the shoulders you need to lean on. If you don't have those shoulders to lean on, find them. I promise you, there's somebody that'll be willing to play that role for you. But stand up, step up, and be the best that you can be, and stop being a victim. Don't let yourself be a victim anymore. Don't give that kind of power to someone else. Take charge of your life. There's where the honor is. There's where the courage is required. There's where respectability derives, and there's where inspiration comes from. All right, I'm going to try to take a quick break, and we'll be switching gears back into the land of the completely and totally political, as we so often do, usually focus on the show. And we're going to play a little bumper music. However, I'm not exactly guaranteed that the audio files will function properly. After all, I have been getting this little message since I signed on today that the BTR engineers are working on the solution for the audio file issue. I don't know what it is, but at any rate, we're going to give this a try. So hopefully the music will work, but if not, just bear with me for a few seconds. In the meanwhile, here she lies in honor of our everybody's favorite Democratic candidate, Hillary Clinton. I'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, I am back. Thanks for staying with me through the break, and we're going to go ahead and jump on into this next segment. Had some stuff I definitely wanted to touch on. You know, we're definitely into the political season, and you would think there'd be tough talk and tough rhetoric going on. We're dealing with this supposed fast-track issue, but there's something else that happened this past week that I think is probably the biggest thing that we need to be aware of, that we need to be paying attention to. And, it's this. There was a massive hacking attack this past week that may have, I'm putting quotation marks here, I'm doing the air quotes, I know the folks aren't seeing the camera right now, but this hack attack that may have stolen the personal information of roughly about 4 million federal employees. Now, they've got folks now trying to figure out, well, why would the Chinese hackers do this? And the prevailing opinion seems to be that the Chinese government is trying to build a vast database of U.S. federal employees. Ideally, of course, this would be so they could find out who's the most susceptible targets for blackmail, who can be flipped or turned, who can be bribed, who can have their families used as leverage. Intel that they can't get directly from the servers and through the hacking. Because here's the thing, that even in the reporting, it kind of gets washed over. It gets the quick once over, and people don't even take the time to think about it. Hackers in China aren't like hackers in the U.S. in all these movies. You see them being radical renegades doing their crazy little thing, and it's all either for a cheap thrill or for money or for whatever it is they're doing. It's not like that in China. If you're a hacker in China, then you're working for the Chinese government. Now, this kind of gets essentially acknowledged in the way the reporting's done. Like I said, most of the experts, the cybersecurity experts, who are advising the government and who are making appearances all over Fox News and CNN and MSNBC and all these other wonderful, fine, fine media outlets, purveyors of news and information and facts. They all acknowledge that the Chinese government is probably trying to build a database. Okay, well, then obviously it's the Chinese government that got this information. So then it's obviously the Chinese government that employed these hackers. Therefore, it's obviously the Chinese government that instituted this cyber attack. Bottom line, and it's never going to be said out loud like this, is the Chinese, well, I say never, but I mean never by the mainstream media or by our federal government. There are people smart enough and willing to tell the truth about this. They're going to say that the Chinese are in an open state of warfare with the United States. Even while Barack Obama is hinting that this new trade deal that he's trying to get fast-tracked should involve the Chinese in an effort to avoid economic war, that they should include the Chinese in this trade deal that, for whatever reason, they want to classify. I mean, there is so much wrong with this trade deal, and we'll spend more time talking about it at a later point in time. Not really the point of today's broadcast. But there's something wrong when the details of a trade deal, not only are the Democrats against it, but the Republicans are for it, which leads to certain question marks to begin with. Not all Republicans, but certainly the leadership in both parties seems to be. Well, I say both parties, what I mean is both the House and the Senate. So I forgive my misspeak. But the leadership seems to be all for it. And they're saying such wonderful platitudes such as, well, I've always been for free trade, which is bull. If they had always been for free trade, they'd be standing up harder against crony capitalism, which is not free trade and not capitalism at all, FYI. The fact that we know that Barack Hussein Obama is not pro-capitalism should tell us all we need to know about any type of trade deal he's negotiating. But the fact that they want to classify the details, the fact that they don't want us to know anything about this deal before it's put in place, that Congress is pushing hard, that they're spending billions of taxpayer dollars, I might add, taxpayer dollars, billions of dollars in an advertising campaign to try and get the American public to tell their representatives to support this fast track with their representatives and them not knowing a dang thing about it. And then they want to classify the details of said agreement so that even after it goes into effect, the American public's not to know details. All these things should tell us something's wrong, and it's time for the Republicans at the very least to stand up and say, oh, hell no. So even with all that going on and China somehow supposedly being part of the deal, nobody is openly admitting that China is in a state of open war against the United States. And because it's a cyber attack, somehow we still have this idea that These cyber attacks are essentially like blowing something up in a video game, and it has no real-world consequences, that somehow it is not legitimate. It's not an actual attack. They're not hurting anything or anybody. And yet none of these people seem to understand, or at least they're not willing to admit, that these same type of attacks could disable our electrical grid. This same type of attack could disable our communications. And perhaps if this was focused not on command and control type communications, but actually at commercial communications, then the American public might care. If suddenly you're turning on your cable to watch the big ball game and oh, you get a static or a little symbol saying, we are the Chinese government and we have control of your television. then the American public might care a little bit more, because then suddenly it would be just a little more real to them. But at any rate, as the details go on, law enforcement officials said this past Friday that the hack appears to have been carried out by the same Chinese hackers who attacked Anthem Insurance earlier this year, in which information on tens of millions of customers were stolen. U.S. officials believed that the breach, which was revealed this past Thursday and affected current and former federal workers of nearly every government agency, could be the biggest ever of the government's computer networks. Now, I pause there for a moment for dramatic purposes. Possibly 4 million federal employees, affecting nearly 80% of all living current and former U.S. government employees. Right now, supposedly, our government doesn't know what information specifically was taken. Even if they did, there's no way that they would be telling us. They don't want us to know what the threat is. They don't want us to know to what extent this took place. Because then they might have to start taking China a little more seriously as a threat publicly. And right now, for whatever reason, they're scared to do that. They don't want to do that. Anyway, I'll continue. I'm trying to not get on the rant just yet. The extent of personal data stolen makes this attack an order of magnitude greater than any we have seen of its kind in the past. That's a quote from California Democratic Representative Adam Schiff, who happens to be the ranking Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee, who was briefed on the attack. China has called the allegation that it was behind the attack irresponsible. But the experts say that the goal behind the attack is to build a database of federal employees, using the stolen personal information to fool and impersonate government workers, to set up future insider attacks by revealing who has security clearances and at what level. The Chinese may now be able to identify, expose, and blackmail U.S. government officials around the world. The connection between the hacking attack and the Anthem incident was first reported by the New York Times. The cybersecurity experts added that some government agencies have not been following the government's own best practices for cybersecurity, such as updating operating systems with the latest protections, just to name one. The Office of Personnel Management, which is conducting background checks, warned it was urged potential victims warned it was urging potential victims to monitor their financial statements and to get new credit reports. Now, of course, federal employees have not taken this news particularly well. They do tend to think that they're privileged and should be protected. Some federal employees actually took to Facebook to express their displeasure. Oh my gosh, they're on Facebook. It's serious now. Quote, unreal. I don't have enough money as it is. A particular Facebook user, the name's here, but I'm not going to give out the name, posted on an Office of Personnel Management's page. They also said, quote, now I have to worry about someone stealing it. Aw, how sad. Welcome to life like the rest of us live currently, because identity thieves are everywhere and they've been hitting everyone. Retiree Linda Eleanor Rigby Robbins, because she's retired, I'll go ahead and put her name out there, posted that she didn't know if she was affected. And you probably won't for a little while. Quote, I do not understand why I heard this on the news instead of via letter or email from the OPM. That's a good question. Suddenly now you're left to discover information about what's going on in the government, the same as Barack Obama claims to. I heard it on the news, or I read it in the paper. Evidently, there's no intelligence currently operating in this administration. George Thomas, who works as an analyst at the Smithsonian Institute, I use the name here because I don't think anything's going on at the Smithsonian Institute that we have to be too concerned about. He said that he felt his employer had done its job in trying to keep his personal information safe. But Thomas also said that in the fast-changing world of technology, it can be difficult for employers to stay ahead of hackers and information breaches. It's an uphill battle. So, you know, at least he's toting the line. And I'm guessing part of the reason he feels that way is he probably doesn't feel like he's at risk for anything the Chinese government might do, working as an analyst at the Smithsonian Institute. But he might be surprised. He could be wrong. I mean, it's hard to say. At any rate, the breach was initially thought to have affected the Office of Personnel Management and the Department of the Interior. But government officials and hackers with nearly every federal government agency. So now we know that the government officials have said that the hackers hit just about everybody. And when you hit the 4 million number, I hope they hit everybody, because it's scary to think that our government might be employing over 4 million people at a time when the government should be looking to cut back. At any rate, the U.S. investigators are quoted as saying that we believe this was China's work. Now, they're still not saying China committed an open act of war, which is what this is. Things that we will have to answer for. It's difficult. It's difficult to believe that someone who claims to be a person of God would take this stand and point the finger at everyone but who's guilty of the actual offense. That is outrageous. And you, sir, are the outrage of the week. On the storefront of headlines you may have missed. I wanted to bring this up just because I kind of thought it was cute, and I have missed the headlines you may have missed segment of the show. Seems that a gay teenager's yearbook quote mocks the gender pay gap perfectly. Came across this on The Independent. It's a UK thing. Over in the United Kingdom, they have a different amount of coverage of the gay and lesbian lifestyle kind of thing. And I just thought this was so clever. Okay, I'm being a little facetious here. But I wanted to talk about it. See, in my day, it's very rare that a gay teenager really realized that they were really gay. Till, you know, late teens, they might have started to wonder if maybe I'm gay. But now they have so many sexual experiences by the time they get to 17 that they pretty much know what their orientation is. That's perhaps just the old fuddy-duddy in me coming out. But I tend to think that that says a lot about our failures as a society, that we have desperately, desperately put our children in a position of... We've desperately failed them, essentially, is what's come down to. But anyway, a gay teenager from California has been hailed as a feminist hero after her high school yearbook quote, and it went viral. Caitlin Cannon, 18, recently graduated from Oak Hills High School in California, and used her yearbook quote as an opportunity to ridicule the absurdity of the gender pay gap. One that's an absurdity all in of itself, I might add, and we'll touch on that a little later. But anyway, the quote reads, "I need feminism because I intend on marrying rich, and I can't do that if my wife and I are making 75 cents for every dollar a man makes." That's the quote. Now, photo of people was posted on Twitter this past week. Close friends. And it is tweeted over 9,000 times. Caitlin told the Huffington was having, quote, "I was tired of seeing the same old quotes from popular books and movies and authors, and I wanted to call attention to a problem that women face. I've never really been ashamed to say that I'm gay, so the LGBT aspect was simply who I am." And that's the story. That's the headline you may have missed. And it certainly is worthy. Bottom line is that the whole pay gender gap is a farce to begin with. The left love to use it. They twist the numbers and they make it work to their advantage. And it's easy enough to do that. I want to go ahead and give a shout-out to Lady Michelle and Mary. By the way, they have managed to get into the chat room. Lady Michelle said that we were having some audio problems. I'm assuming that must have been during the time where I got disconnected briefly. Mary's letting me know that she's always known she was a female. So congratulations, Mary. I'm glad that you were there. And now Lady Michelle's actually letting me know that she can make out what I'm saying now. So hopefully these audio file issues have been taken care of. And who knows, maybe that was actually what the little message from BTR was about. They weren't particularly specific. Just as an experiment, earlier this week, I saw an article. Actually, I think it was last week now, I think about it. I saw an article about the 20 questions that you're not supposed to ask. And I found them very interesting, so I took each one of them And I posted them as statements on Facebook just to see what the reaction would be. And one of them, of course, was about this imaginary pay gap. And I did it because I thought a lot of them would actually start conversations. And it actually did. I probably had one of the most engaging weeks on Facebook with people that I've had in a while. Because usually all you get is your fair share of likes and a few comments here and there. But I actually got people to engage on these different topics. And one of these questions was, if a man puts in more time, takes less time off, and works harder, and does jobs that are nastier and less popular than the females do at the same position, shouldn't they be getting paid more? Now, the whole point of the question is, of course, to try and illustrate the fact that this is all about apples to bananas. Because it's not even apples and oranges, which is the common phrase. Now, obviously, apples are apples, oranges are oranges, but now we're talking about bananas, too. At least an orange looks a little bit like an apple in the basic shape, typically. But this is a case of comparing things that are so different, you have no business making the comparison. And that's where this imaginary pay gap comes from. Women doing the same job, but have they been doing the same job for as long? Have they put in the same amount of time? Have they spent the same amount of time on the job during that time frame, i.e., have they taken time off for maternity leave? Have they done this, that, that? And by no means is this saying that you should be penalized for that. But it is saying that employers do tend to value their employees based on how much value those employees bring back to the bottom line of the company. So when men are making more than women at a certain job, typically there is a legitimate employer-based reason. Because in lots of cases, in our modern America, lots and lots of women are actually getting paid more than men in similar roles. At one point in my many incarnations of my career, I was a manager for a quick service restaurant. And I have to tell you that during that time frame, there were a lot of women managers that were working for the same quick service restaurant. And I have to tell you, without doubt and without question, these women were bringing home a lot more money than I was. Even ones that came along a little bit later than I did. Now, the company was run almost exclusively by men at the executive level. So it wasn't the case of women looking out for women, nothing along those lines. But it was a case for some of these people were coming from more experience in the past, so they were offered more. And in some cases, there were various other reasons. I didn't ever have a problem with it. Most of the time, my focus is on how am I going to make more money? And I can't be focused on taking care of me and my family if I'm all concerned about what everybody else is making. In fact, the only reason it ever came up was because, casual conversations and then things would come along and the natural kind of an evolution of, well, you know, I'm actually getting this much, so why can't you do the same things that we're doing? Like, well, because I'm not getting that much. Did raise an eyebrow a time or two. There were a couple of folks that was like, why are they making more? But when it comes down to it, it's a false argument. And the fact that this young lady, because she is 18 now, so I mean, she deserves to be called a young woman. She made this quote, and she thought it was cute. She thought it was funny. I plan on marrying rich. Okay, well, good for you. Glad to see that love enters into your faculties a great deal. But somehow, this is held up as being a heroic statement. When I came across that story, I, of course, posted onto the Tap Into the Truth Facebook page, along with the caption of, I guess it doesn't take much to be a feminist hero these days. And I keep coming back to that because obviously it must not. Feminism is in such desperate need of heroes that they're willing to take this girl's quibby quote that I don't think she was even overly serious about. But because all of a sudden people want to take that quote seriously to mean something, well, you know, she's going to take that attention that's offered to her. Why not? Most people would. So how sad is it, though? How sad is it that people want to get excited about a statement like that? Oh, I plan on marrying rich. How am I supposed to do that if my wife and I are only making... Well, how about this? How about you and your wife, whenever you meet this lovely lady, decide that you're going to find yourself in a position where you have every opportunity to make a full dollar on the dollar of what everyone's getting paid, and then you work as hard and you put forth the same effort and you put in the same amount of time, and then maybe, just maybe, you might find yourself in a position where you're making more than the other men around you doing the same jobs. But alas, chances are if you're working for a living, you're probably not going to get to marry rich anyway. Most rich people, they're not doing it through working for somebody else. So there you go. Not to establish this class warfare or class envy kind of thing. Certainly don't want to do that. And certainly don't want to insinuate that rich people don't work, because the ones that have started their own businesses and made themselves rich, they tend to be the ones that are working harder. That's why they're successful. There is an equation there. Harder work normally equals better success. Now, there are always exceptions. Always exceptions. I get that. I understand that. It's hard. It's tough. It's terrible. Life isn't fair. But then that goes back to what I was saying at the end of the first hour. And that is, it's not cool to be a victim. Pick yourself up and move on. That's where you have to be. So that's the headlines you may have missed. And trust me, I think you're probably not any better off for having heard it now. But that's that. Now, as I understand, we've been having some serious audio issues with the broadcast. And I hope not so much that it has ran anybody away. At some point in time, it actually appears that I was actually disconnected from the broadcast at one point, and because I was so into what I was saying at the time, and I was reading a lot from the particular article, I'm not even real sure when I lost connection. I do know it was at some point when we were talking about China's open attacks on America. This cyber attack it represents something that is as dangerous and as real as dropping a bomb on a location. It's a genuine threat. We have to take it seriously, and we need leadership that will. We don't have that now. We don't have it in the White House. We don't have it as the Speaker of the House. We don't have it as the President of the Senate. You know, the so-called leaders are not leaders, and we need leadership. We need leadership who understand that there are times to be diplomatic, and then there are times to just talk tough, and it's more than just talking the talk, that you have to walk the walk. You have to be willing to do things that, you know, sometimes maybe even the bulk of the American people may be against, but you have to be willing to do it because you know, with the information you have in hand, that it's the right thing to do. Mary in the chat room is asking, leadership, what's that? And that's a legitimate question, because it's been so long since we've seen any from our politicians, in D.C. in particular. It's almost become as rare as common sense. We need leaders that, while we may not agree with 100%, 100% of the time, that we know have our best interests at heart when they do the things they do. We know that's not the case with Barack Hussein Obama. We know that he and his family hate America. We know this, that despite whatever pretty words they may put out in front of people, their actions and the themes of their speeches tell a very different story, that they actually tell the story of someone who sees a broken country that's never worked right, that needs to be replaced with Marxism and communism and socialism and any other ism that can help keep us divided, help keep us fighting amongst ourselves so that we don't unite to tell them it's time for you to go. I've very nearly given up on the Republican Party as a place for conservatives to be at this point. And I hate to say that because I was very much on board with the let's take the party back. But, you know, the more I've looked into it, the more I realize that even during the Goldwater and the Reagan days, the fight was almost lost then for Republicans to be a conservative party. They fought tooth and nail against conservatism. They fought tooth and nail to try and keep the very ideas of small government from being part of their platform. But if you do still believe that the Republican Party can be redeemed, then you have to realize that the time has come that we start electing people into positions under the R banner that aren't afraid to be labeled, that aren't afraid to be called names, and it's time that we accepted that it's time that we become a party of hate. We've been accused of being a party of hate for a long time. That's neither here nor there, because I'm not talking about a party that hates people. I'm talking about a party that hates certain philosophies. I'm not afraid for you to call me a hater, because I do hate. I hate socialism. I hate communism. I hate Islamofascism. I hate a good many things that I see as being counterproductive to the American condition, to the human condition. And certainly stand in opposition to our Constitution here, and therefore stands in opposition to personal liberty and freedom. I hate anything that is a threat to that. And while I try not to hate people, in fact, I can't think of anybody that I do actually genuinely hate. There are several people I dislike greatly, especially, strangely enough, in the political world. But I suppose I would have to hate someone if they were so embraced in one of these ideologies that they would take it to a point where we could not be reasonable with one another. This republic is all but lost. Still, in my heart of hearts, I have this small, tiny flame of hope that I'm clinging to. I see and I hear people, and you know, when I talk to average, everyday Americans, whether they're in Ohio or Texas or Utah, which has been some of the most prevailing places here recently that I've had opportunities to talk to, or even right here in Tennessee, I know that regardless of their political affiliations, that for the most part, they love this country. And they want this country to continue to exist, not just in some needed, that they want, even though a lot of them have a fundamental lack of understanding of the Constitution, they want the Constitution to continue to be the guiding principle and foundation, the bedrock for how our government behaves. And it is knowing that there are these people still out there, and that more and more of them are waking up every day to the fact that our government has lost its way, that it's tried to take too much power, that our elected officials in the House and in the Senate have set back and allowed the occupier of the White House to garner and grab even more authority than he's ever been constitutionally permitted. So they too are as complicit if not even more so, just because they're not against bigger government either. They like the idea of bigger government. They just want to be the ones in charge. So they're not about to challenge the power and authority and scope. They just want to win the next election. So that then they, too, can have it. Now, Mary says that the idea of sending these elected officials is not enough to take back the party and probably not enough to take back the Republican. You're absolutely right, but that's still where we have to start. That's where it starts. I've talked to a lot of folks about the subject of this convention of the states. I think we're to a point where we've got to have that as well. I've had constitutional lawyers on here in the past who have said that that's not necessary, and that, in fact, it's still dangerous. They're talking about a runaway convention and things getting crazy. I think we can avoid that. But I think that it's important for us to remember that we, the American public, are the ones who grant the authority to our government. With our current Constitution intact or not, it is through the consent of the governed that they act. And it is through the consent of the governed that we must constrain them. We should, we can, we must. That's our responsibility. We do this through conversations. We do this through talking, and we do this through action. If that action involves elections and rallies and educating our friends, our neighbors, our coworkers, especially those who are Democrats and don't know why. And then other steps as necessary. If we have to take it to the point of civil disobedience, within reason, of course, I'm not advocating open warfare. I'm not calling for that. I wouldn't want to see that. But I certainly would rather see that before I saw this country fall into a true socialist system. And I think there are a lot of other Americans out there that feel the same way. Some of them a lot more strongly than I do, that are actually ready at this point to say, it's too much already. I don't want those people to win the day, but I certainly don't want people like Barack Hussein Obama and his ilk of mealy-mouthed, inconsistent, as-the-wind-blows politicians who have an agenda to try and push us into a system that we would never recognize again, that usurps the freedoms of the citizens, that makes the citizens no longer the sovereigns of this nation. Instead, we keep getting these sideshows, like the stories about the transabled and where we're at and where we have to think about those, and stories about Bruce Jenner and why we should be paying so much attention to his brave and bold movements, and oh yeah, let's watch the NBA finals right now because, you know, sports is important. And, you know, I'm a sports fan, but there are so many things that are so much more important right now. Now, as a sports fan, I can tell you I've lost a lot of interest in watching the NBA. I haven't watched it seriously much since Michael Jordan retired. On and off, yes. Not that that matters much, but it's gotten to where so much of the NBA has become a league of a bunch of thugs, I don't find it entertaining or fun to watch anymore. It's one of the biggest reasons why I probably watch a lot more college sports than professional sports, regardless of the sport. I enjoy sports. I enjoy watching sports, but we need to pay more attention to things like what's going on with this Iranian deal and what's going on with this supposed trade deal that they want to classify the details that they don't want us to know about. There's something terribly wrong there. Now, I'm inside the last 90 minutes of the show, so I've got to start winding down, but you know, I want to thank everybody who's listening, especially if you got to this point of the show after the issues we had again. I want to thank Mary and Lady Michelle in particular for your activities in the chat room and your continued support of the show. You ladies mean a lot to me. I also want to make sure that you're aware, if you are a veteran, that I thank you, and I'm certain that every other listener to this show thanks you. And I want you to realize that we are Americans first and foremost. That means we've got to come together. So in the last 10 seconds, I want to say goodbye to everybody. We'll be back again next week. God bless. Everybody have a great rest of the Sunday. Have a great upcoming week, and we'll be back again next Sunday where we'll talk about these items and a little bit more. Thanks, and we'll see you next week.
Heartbreak, but